Yo, you're here, I'm here, I'm glad you're here. I hope that you are doing fantastic. I know that wherever you find yourself at this moment, that there's always a way through whatever struggle you're facing, and it will grow you. And so you come to this podcast to learn about that, to be inspired, and I'm glad you're here. This episode today is a supplemental episode to the second skill that I talk about. Leaders create reality. And the episode on a mindset that is as sharp and as focused and as clear as it can be. If you have a leader who has a sharp, clear, focused mindset, that person or leader then will be great at creating culture. So we want to talk about culture today because Peter Drucker years ago said, culture eats strategy for breakfast. So it doesn't matter what you're attempting to do if the culture around you isn't healthy. And this applies to your family, to the teams that you're leading, to maybe the company that you're building. And culture, if you were to research, what a culture is, it's the context around the company. It's the idea that I could say, hey, I'm going to make great choices today regarding my health, and I have a strategy for how I'm going to do that. And then I come into the office, and somebody's ordered a tray full of sliders. Now my strategy goes out the window because the environment around me is tempting me with these delicious little bites. So culture eats strategy for breakfast. It doesn't matter whatever training you have in place or whatever you're attempting or whatever the systems are or whatever kind of children you want to raise, the culture will determine what is caught more than what is actively taught. I worked at a Chick-fil-A years ago in high school, and I remember one night we were cleaning up and one of the managers took a piece of cheesecake and dropped it on the floor. Oops. And of course, it was in its container still. And he goes, well, I dropped it. I guess I got to eat it. Now, when he is shaping the culture that way, how do you think that rubbed off on us? Yeah, I mean, I'm passing nuggets out in the mall. I'm giving nuggets away, and I'm eating nuggets. And maybe I'm serving the customer, and I'm putting food on their tray, and then I'm turning around and snagging a few nuggets and eating them because we were trained by the culture the manager was shaping. And I know a lot of you have been a part of some whack family cultures, whack company cultures. They exist. If you try to look up, how do you build a great culture online, there's not like a consensus definition. It hasn't been researched thoroughly because this is an art and a science. And you'll find wacky stuff like, you've got to have a fun office environment. And it's just not true. In fact, Spartan surroundings, surroundings that aren't as awesome, sometimes produce the best results. That's been actually shown in some studies. You can find that in different places. I remember reading that in the book called The Talent Code. I mean, I think about where I'm at with the business currently, we had 46% growth from last year to this year. Our key coaching program, I only do two kinds of coaching now. Our key one, a 12-week one, I think it's probably made a total of around 130, 150K. I wrote that in a closet, standing in a closet, like literally like shutting my door. And it wasn't even a door you could shut. It was the bifolding kind. So there's hardly any room and I'm like pressed up against my computer. So you try to look up what makes up a great culture. You're going to find lots of different reasons. So what I'm going to do today is teach you the three actions that make up a great culture. And these three actions have to be repeated over and over and over and over and over. So we're going to dive in and explain how you make a great culture. It's three pieces. It's vision, it's unity, and it's adaptability. Vision, unity, and adaptability. And I'm going to break this down for you. You can picture it like a Venn diagram, three overlapping circles. You need all three of these for a great culture. You've got to have vision. See, here's the problem with vision. Vision drifts. Vision leaks. the third child syndrome, right? If you've ever talked to a family that has had up to three children, we do. By the third child, things get a little more lax. The other night, my wife and I woke up, and our third child had a sleepover. And she tells me, oh my gosh, there's an empty bag of marshmallows in here. And I'm like, yeah, I walked through the living room, and I saw them playing Chubby Bunny, you know, where they stuff them in their mouth. She's getting all hyped up on that sugar. So her and her friend had this just, you know, bender of sugar. They put a blanket down in her bedroom and slammed some chips. We're talking about a junk food bender weekend, right? You know, our oldest two would never do that. They'd be like, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to make a mess in our rooms like that. Our parents will kill us. We're going to do that in the kitchen, and then we're going to clean up. So the vision drifts with the third child. The vision drifts with the third hire or the fifth hire or the tenth hire. You know, you think the vision is clear, and then you find out somebody did something. You're like, what? Why did they do that? Because as the organization grows, it's harder, or I say it's easier for the vision to drift. It's harder to maintain the vision, to keep it clear, front and center, hot. So wherever you find yourself, you need to understand that the vision is the essential component for the culture's direction, and you'll never need to stop casting vision. It's amazing what vision does. See, a leader, and I talked a little bit about this in the last podcast, helps people imagine they can go somewhere they never thought they could go. JFK is like, we're going to go to the moon. We can't go to the moon. Yeah, a leader helps you have a vision of something you never thought could happen. Or maybe you thought it could happen to someone else. Oh yeah, they could do that, but not me. A leader can also inspire people to accomplish feats they didn't know they could get done. That takes vision. It takes this idea that, whoa, that could be me. I could go there. Vision helps you endure through challenging circumstances. One of my kids is in gymnastics, and you know, they have these meets, and the meets are like 3 hours long. And a 3 hour long meet means you only get to watch your daughter perform for 3 minutes or 4 minutes each of the four exercises. So 3 hours, and there's only 4 minutes, and it's long and it's hard. And if you're listening to this, honey, when you get older, let me get to the point of this story, and maybe you'll be comforted. But it's hard. You're sitting there, and then they have an award show. And they don't just award places 1 through 3. They award like places 1 through 7 or 1 through 8. And that's difficult because there's so many awards to give out. And man, you know, come on. What business out there does well if it's in 4th place or 5th place or 6th place? Let's just teach these kids how it is. We reward 1st through 3rd. And you know, they put in a ton of time practicing. When I first started going to the meets, you know, some of you are better parents than me, so I'm just going to say what I think, okay? And you can judge me. But when I first started going to the meets, I thought, shouldn't they be better than this? All the time they put in? And I know it's not fair to them that I see it on the Olympics and these amazing athletes, and it took years and years of practice to get there. But the reality is, and this is the second thing I think as a parent that makes me terrible, is, hey, none of these kids are going to the Olympics. You know, they're just not. You got to start at age 3. You got to move near a gym, be with a coach, you know. So if you're starting at age 10 or 8 or 12, whatever, you know, come on. So why does this happen? Short of the joy of the children, which is why I'm there, why do parents endure the money and the time? Well, they keep a vision in front of them. You walk into a meet, there's 500 kids competing, but they'll have a picture up of the kid who's getting a scholarship for gymnastics. Now, the odds are low. So I could get up in front of all those parents and say, hey, parents, the realistic possibility that your kid is going to get a scholarship is very, very low. But that's okay because they keep showing up. They keep believing because there's vision. Now, if I'm being honest with you, I know that, and I hope I'm always honest with you, that my vision isn't a college scholarship. My vision happens when I see my daughter win an award and her beaming from that and so excited from where she's gotten her hands ripped and bloodied from the last time that she was in practice. But what I want to see over and over in her is, are you passionate to keep practicing? Then we'll keep doing it. But if she told me she wanted to quit and was like, Dad, I think I'm done. Another way you're a better parent than me. I wouldn't be like, oh, no, you started. You got to finish, honey. I want you to learn an important lesson. I would be like, all right. In fact, I would be like, yes, okay. Now, to my beautiful daughter, if in case you listen to this years later, not that I don't think it as an 11-year-old you're listening to my podcast, which I know you're not, it was worth it to see your joy. Okay, so that's my vision to endure. But other parents, yeah, college scholarship isn't going to happen. Point of this is a vision helps you endure, right? So you got to have vision. That's the first component. Second component, unity. And it's a fought for unity. It's a two-way unity. It's a shared unity. It's not forced. It's not top-down dictatorial. It's both ways. There have been times I've stepped into organizations and had to lead a culture turnaround. And sometimes it was a culture enhancement. You always want to move the culture forward. One, I remember where there was a lot of disorganization and miscommunication, I started requiring the team to come in and do a stand-up meeting with me. So every day we had to start the day, 5 minutes, stand up behind your chair in the conference room, and we meet. Well, what happened over time was we get aligned, we're focused, but we are connected. I know what they're working on. They know and learn how I'm helping them prioritize so they can prioritize on their own. I'm saying to them, help me know the struggles of your day. Put me in your world. Where do we need to change systems? What needs to get better? I've got to know that relationships always require work. Just like vision will always drift, relationships will always require work. And so eventually the stand-up meetings went away. And of course, at first, some people are like, oh, you're micromanaging. And I wasn't micromanaging. I was trying to get us in tight. Over time, they're like, I see what you were doing. And then we would fall into a more regular rhythm with our meetings. But through those meetings, we were allowed to protect what was happening relationally. We got to always put the work in that needed to be put in so that we could have unity. See, when unity is happening on a team, there's listening from the leader to the team. Hey, in what way do I need to understand what they're going through? How are we creating hoops they need to jump through? How can we simplify the process? How can we unblock the progress? But there's also the other way. And then the team's able to go, you know what? I know that person isn't here anymore, and they got fired or they quit, and I'm trusting there was something that I don't know. I'm trusting that if I had all the information, I would go, what freaking took you so long to let them go? I'm moving with my heart even when all the information isn't there. That is unity. The second necessary piece of a culture, the third piece, and not that these are ranked because you got to have them all three, is adaptive in practice or adaptivity. You've got to have the vision, you got to have the unity, and you got to have the adaptivity. You've never found the best way to do what you're doing. There's always a better way. I remember when I got a visual reminder of this, I've been a parent for 14 years, and something about being a parent, I feel like I should start a Twitter handle on grumpy dads. I do love being a dad, and it's a privilege, but there are things that just come with it that I wouldn't normally do. I would not normally carve a pumpkin on Halloween. I know some of you are like, no, it's so fun. It's not fun. Like, why do extra work like that? So being a parent, we carve some pumpkins. It's such a freaking pain to carve a pumpkin. You cut the top, and then what do you do after you cut the top of it off? You got to clean it. Yeah. Stupid. Dumb. Why? Other things need to be clean. Let's not clean a pumpkin. But hey, be a good dad. Clean the pumpkin. So carve it. Do whatever. You get done. Now, I one time saw where somebody said, stop carving your pumpkin from the top or cutting the top off. Cut the bottom off. Cut the bottom of the pumpkin out. Then just scrape it clean, set the pumpkin back on that bottom, and then you've got your jack-o'-lantern. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's such a better way to do that. See, it's this idea of innovation. It's moving it forward. As much as you can look at your life or look at your processes or look at your systems or look at how you do things or your client engagement process, your sales process, whatever it is, The minute you say, this is the best way to do it, you've stopped being adaptive. And innovation is about understanding you haven't found the best way. And innovation doesn't always mean you have these giant leaps forward. It also means that you consistently are working on your practice. And as you're adaptive, you keep improving it. I've told you this story before, so I'll just do it real brief. You know, the first time I ever spoke publicly or facilitating a group conversation, good old Ben said to me, maybe you could make it more interesting. And that hurt to hear, but it motivated me. And I started getting in the car and getting into a conversational flow state while music was playing. And I would go to this local lake and stand up on the shore and put a talk together. Like, people wanted to hear what I had to say. And I would just deliver it with all the passion I could. And as awkward as that was, it was the practice that helped me adapt. Plus, I helped change some ducks' lives. It's what I do. They would gather around and listen. No. The idea being is this. You've never found the best way. You keep moving forward. See, all great cultures are built on vision, which is really faith. Faith of what could be and should be. And unity. Yes, we want to fight for relational unity. And I don't care if you think this is weird. I really don't. We're talking about love there. You can be in a relational context where there is love, even in the workplace leadership. Yes, why not? We spend more time with these people often than our own families. Why would we not want it to be this way? Not only faith, not only love, but also adaptive in practice. The adaptivity, the hope that we'll keep improving. This is what makes a great culture. Now, let me give you a caution. The caution is you can't just have two of these components. See, if you have just two of these components, then you're going to miss out on building a great culture. What do I mean? Well, let's think about it this way. If you have vision and relational unity, but you're not adaptive, well, then you're not going to be moving forward. You're not going to be nurturing momentum. You're going to be poor. What worked today isn't going to work forever, and you will eventually be left without the resources you need. See, if a culture has vision and unity but isn't adaptive, people will leave. You will not retain talent because there's not enough resources for them to attain mastery. And that's what we want. This was proven in an employment study that we want to reach mastery in what we do. And so if you have vision, and if you keep it clear and you understand vision drifts and you burn it hot and you fight for relational unity, but you're not an organization comfortable with change or building a family culture that's comfortable with change, you're going to lose momentum and there's not going to be mastery. Now, if a culture has unity, okay, they fight for that unity and they're adaptive, they're willing to change practices, but there's no vision, there's no direction, there's not going to be any meaning for people. They don't know how to connect what they're doing to purpose. And so you're going to have people hitting a career ceiling. They're going to fizzle out in the passion they have for their role or their job. And because of no meaning and no passion for their role, they leave. People will leave when there's not enough resources. People will leave when there's no meaning. And if a culture is adaptive and has vision, so it changes in practice, and it has direction, but there's no relational unity, okay? It's just a messed up culture relationally. There will be bad bosses and managers. And if there's bad bosses and managers, you know what's going to happen to the people when there's no relational unity? With bad bosses and managers, the people will be afraid, and the bad bosses and managers are angry. And because the people are afraid and the bad bosses and managers are angry, there's no autonomy. Everyone is hovered over, like helicopter parenting. And so the person isn't able to decide, like, hey, here's the next thing I'd like to work on, and I want to chat about this with you, and here's how I'd like to go about this project. They're not empowered to develop. So see, this is why we have to have all three. If you're missing one of these, you need to understand, this is a signal for you, how smoke becomes fire. You're going to have an organizational fire if you're missing one of these culture pieces. The best people will leave bad cultures. They leave because there aren't enough resources to be awesome. They leave the role they're fulfilling because they can't connect it to meaning and vision and purpose. And they leave bad bosses. This is why people leave. Now, if you're going to move the culture forward, I need to prepare you for this. If you're going to say, okay, I get this, that the vision will drift, that relationships require work, and that we haven't found the best way, I'll commit to these three practices. I will cast vision continually. I will not let them lose meaning, and I will fight for relational unity, and I will keep a change culture that's healthy so we're open to change. You need to understand, if you move the culture forward like that, people that want it to stay bad, their behavior is going to be surfaced. All people have worth. All people have meaning. I believe that. But not everybody's going to be an A player in your culture. And sometimes they have weasel-type behavior. So if you have a culture that has vision and it has unity, but it's not adaptive in practice, and you start introducing change, the weasel behavior that gets surfaced is a person who fights against change. Well, we've never done it that way before. Ah, weasel-type behavior. See, they were able to carve out a little fiefdom where they could resist change subversively. Maybe they even, you know, you give the rah-rah speech and they're like, yes, that's what we need to do. But then they go behind the scenes and undo the change. This gets surfaced when you start being adaptive. Now, if a culture has unity, it's this relational unity, and it's adaptive in practice, but there's no vision, and you start bringing more vision, the weasel behavior that gets surfaced is people that like to hijack the moment for their agenda. And this always happens. If you don't fill the space with vision, it will be filled with something else, and it's not going to be positive. See, if you don't have a culture where there is a vision, you have unity, and it's adaptive. People will be disappointed. You'll be disappointed because you're not going to end up where you want to be. And if your culture is adaptive and it has vision, but there's no unity, and you start increasing the work you put into the relationships, what's going to get surfaced with a weasel is the ways they display relational immaturity. It happens every time. So here's the challenge to you and me. Doesn't it feel good to finish something? I don't know about you, but in the work of building cultures and leadership and growing, it's nebulous. You don't actually reach a finish point. There's no point you reach where somebody goes, hey, great job. You're done for the day. Maybe for you, it's mowing the grass. It feels a sense of accomplishment or completion. Whatever it is, there's a feeling where it's like, ah, I'm done. You'll never have that with building a culture. Every day you got to wake up and understand the vision will drift, so I will cast the vision of what could be and should be with faith that this reality can happen. Unity. All relationships require work. So you don't wake up and think you're done. You engage relationships every day going, all right, we're going to have a healthy relational space. And it doesn't mean that I have to do everything everybody wants me to. In fact, I'll lead meetings oftentimes and I'll say, hey, here's what I think we should do. And people push back against it. And I go, yep, you're right. You changed my mind. Or nope, you didn't change my mind. We're still going to do it. Relational unity doesn't mean we all sit here and say, oh, we're completely of one mind. It just means we leave the room, both parties having they feel that they've been heard, and we have an agreed plan of action. And sometimes the leader has to say, I know you don't see what I'm seeing, but this is what we got to do. But that takes work, right? And it's showing up every day, understanding also that you haven't found the best way to do it. And there's hope. Hope that we're going to keep moving forward. So may you be the kind of person who doesn't falsely believe they can reach a finish line, but understand every day the vision can drift, the vision will drift, relationships require work, and you haven't found the best way yet. Thanks for being here. Have an awesome day. Peace.